This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4. Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, change it, point it to me, press it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quickly write it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it.
This is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Technogaze, where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. I'm Michael and in the studio with me this week is Nicole.
Hello.
How are you going?
Very well.
It's been a big week, hasn't it?
It has.
Lots of stuff that we're going to talk about. And we also have Sir Josh.
Sir Josh, I love it. Is that just because I wrote that in the notes?
Yeah, whatever's written in the notes gets written out, Josh. You know that.
Damn, I should have put something more then.
Can be a little bit dangerous if we decide to play little gags on ourselves that we forget to remove when we're reading it out. So,
not that we'd ever do that.
No, not that we would ever do that. This week, we've got quite a few new things to look at. The Apple Watch, it's everywhere. I don't know about you guys, but every single tech blog that I looked at, every second story is about the Apple Watch. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about that. And we've got a little subject I think that you're quite fond of, Nicole, robotics.
I love robotics. After watching Chappie, I think I've become more involved in robotics and how it's all going.
Yeah, fantastic. So we'll have a look at some of the developments in the robotics area and some of the things that the future may bring. And moving on, we will be looking at some updates to some hardware that's been released recently, with Apple releasing a new version of MacBook and Microsoft with a new Surface. And then finally, we're just going to do a little bit of section on some new tech that's going to be quite practical and quite useful.
I think so.
So let us move on. Don't forget, you can contact us on
0427 Joy 949
or
on air at joy.org.au.
And we haven't rehearsed this, by the way, and on 1300 Joy 949 if you would like to leave a message for Heath at the front desk. Now, I have an announcement to make about Tech Drive.
Handing over to me. So, Rusty, have been on air for a while. Tech Drive 2015 has reached the target of $20,000 to raise the money for our new transmitter.
Fantastic. Wow.
Which we haven't quite installed yet. There's still a whole bunch of more other things to go through and ordering processes and stuff. So, should be pretty fun.
Fantastic. That's good news. So, thank you to everybody who donated in Australia and around the world, because we had people from all sorts of countries donating.
Yeah, Canada and Poland and everywhere. It was really good.
So we will sound crisp shortly.
Shortly.
Or crisper.
Coming soon.
Actually, maybe it's going to be like 4K TV, where you can see every single line and wrinkle on the presenter's faces. So our voices are going to show every nuance and every croaky voice.
No.
The Apple Watch. Can anyone escape it?
I want an Apple Watch. I did say this last week, so yeah. I'm still...
It's one of those things we were discussing a bit earlier, was I have no use for one. I have no practical use for buying an Apple Watch. I've got probably a drawer full of wristwatches at home, from ones with Bluetooth and my Pebble and all these other, you know, lovely ones.
That you keep on trying.
I'm not wearing it, you know. I'm at that point, if I buy it, is it going to sit in a drawer? The answer is probably going to be yes, because I'll get sick of charging it.
What about you, Nicole? Do you own any
I have a few watches. But I do want an Apple Watch, and I totally agree with you, Josh. But at the same time, it's just something to have. And I know it only lasts 18 hours, but it's 18 hours of joy.
I hope it's 18 hours between charges and not that sort of you throw it away and buy a new one. Actually, that, from a marketing point of view, would be brilliant if people were happy to pay that money.
Sure.
Is it the other watches you have, are they standard watches or any sort of computer type watches?
No, just standard watches.
Standard watches. Okay, so you're a bit of a watch person.
But I do have a digital sort of watch. Kinda.
So my question is it the technology that excites both of you, or is it the brand, or a bit of both?
Bit of both.
Okay, a bit of both for you. And
it's definitely a bit of both. It's probably for me more the technology than brand. Even though I'm sitting here right now with, you know, the same brand on about 10 different devices I've got on me, I'm not a big brand person. It's if it the use of the tool.
I guess that's by the fact that you have a Pebble already and it's sitting in the drawer.
Yeah.
See, when I first saw the Pebble, and I think Avi was the first one in the station who had a Pebble, it was like, oh, I've got to get one of these. But in typical me fashion, I forgot about it and then sort of moved on to other toys that I crave and never bought.
I wish I could. Me and my credit card stay up a little bit too late sometimes in the Kickstarter campaign. Maybe.
So are you one of these people that need the feature on their credit card that stops you from ordering between certain hours of the day?
Would be handy. from certain sites.
This is where you need an Apple Watch, because what will happen is your Apple Watch will know whether you've just woken up or not. And your rules of your credit card will say, I'm not allowed to order anything within 30 minutes of waking up. So you can't sleep order.
Yeah, ordering.
Oh, this is a new app. Sorry, everybody, forget about it. I've now patented it. It's a new app.
Michael's left and gone to the patent office. That's it.
Now, you two aren't alone with the draw of the lure of the Apple Watch. It was released for pre-order this week or last week, and there have been quite a few people who have put their hand up to say they wanted it. Just under 1 million in the US alone.
It's pretty good. It's a pretty good uptake for something that's pre-ordering at the moment.
It is a pretty good update, and I know there are lots and lots of companies that would be very, very happy with 1 million pre-orders.
I think so.
But not everybody is, because the analyst expectations on this were much, much higher for the pre-orders, to the point where they're now, because they use as an indicator to assess volumes, whereas now they're sort of essentially short-selling it, saying that instead of selling, I think it was something like 65 million watches, they're looking at 22 million watches. Oh, sorry. So from 22 million down to 16 million in the US.
I think it's like when the Apple iPhone comes out, you can line up, go into a store and physically have it there and then on that day. You've parted with the money and you've got it. I think with pre-ordering with things like devices like this, it's give us your money and then in 6 weeks' time we'll give you a watch.
So you've really got to be, a diehard Apple fan to do it?
I think so. I think them now coming back on how many they think would actually have, it's probably... They're overreacting a little bit too quick. I think once the actual release date comes on, that'll be when we actually see whether the people think the watch is worth it or not.
The real volumes or not.
I agree. I mean, I did go into an Apple store a few weeks ago and asked about the watch, and when they said, it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks, I was a little bit upset about that. But at the same time, if I really want something, you'll wait for it. So.
Yes, I don't know, but if they gauge this on the diehard Apple fans who will basically order off the spec,
yes,
and if those people aren't behaving the way that they expect, is the general consumer going to behave the same way or not? That's the question that we'll find out about shortly, I guess, when they release the watch.
Mm-hmm.
But, Reuters puts it down as... Actually, Reuters say about 19 million in the US, which is 6% of the population, which isn't bad, really.
For a watch.
If anyone wants to buy me one. More than happy.
You're more than happy.
You want
to wear
the gold
it.
Watch, though.
Yeah, I want the gold one.
What, 17,500 US?
Compliment my Ferrari that someone else has to deliver to me later on.
Josh's wish list.
Sir Josh.
Sir Josh. Must not forget Sir Josh. Yes. Now, alongside with all the hoo-ha with the new Apple Watch has been hoo-ha about some Apple Watch apps. I read something that said, please don't make an app for the Apple Watch just because you can, because every man and their dog are making watch apps, apparently. But these are some useful ones in the healthcare industry.
Yes, I've seen quite a few of different apps. There's about 13 or so health apps at the moment, which were announced last week. A lot of the apps, they deliver things like lab results, blood sugar information, glucose levels. So it's very interesting to see how we are sort of working in society rather than actually being contacted through a pager or a local phone. It's now checking a watch.
As your means of communication.
Mm.
Yeah, it is. And what I like about some of these apps is that they're either aimed at the healthcare giver, so the professional market, or they're aimed at the consumer, or they're aimed at both.
Mm.
And I really do like the idea of the ability to electronically be monitored remotely, essentially, by a healthcare professional for whatever the circumstance is, whether it's somebody who needs to make sure on an ongoing basis that you're okay, or somebody that needs to check in and have a look at your, let's say, your blood sugar levels every 24 hours or something like that. Technology now allows us to do that.
I think it's one of those great things that, you know, which would help elderly people or sick people stay in their home a lot longer if it's like, oh, you know, Michael checking up on his mother.
I thought Michael was the elderly person.
We're checking up on Michael. And she gets a prompt that says, you know, Michael's checking up, how are you? I don't know if you've seen the MediAlert stuff that's in a lot of homes now.
Well, my mother has one of those.
Yep, so she's got to go up to the actual box every morning or every couple of days and go, yes, I'm here. Hello.
Now, because I enjoy black humour. So, you know, in technology, we talk about keep alives. This is the keep alive alert. I'm alive.
Well, look, that's it. It's one of those things that I don't think it should just be a matter of, I want to check in on you. Where are you right now? I think there still needs to be some sort of visual or, you know, acceptance of the end user every time of, you know, your doctor wants to check up on your current blood pressure or whatever.
Or do you give permission for that? Yes, I agree. It needs to be permissions-based. But because it is linked to your iPhone, one of the things with these MediAlert type things is they're linked to your telephone, home phone. Mm. So it's not portable. You go outside of the house and something happens, you can't press... If you're wearing one of the things around your neck, you can't press that.
Exactly.
Whereas at least with the watch, if it's easy enough, then you can press a button there that says basically, I need help, which would be really useful. The other thing that you can do with all of these apps on the watch, which you can also do on the phone, I guess, is that if somebody falls over, the watch can sense that with their different motion detectors and tell that somebody's fallen over. And if it's an elderly person,
send
then
out the location.
Yeah, do the car thing, which is, you know, when you crash, do you need help? Shall I call 000? It's the watch can say that. And if you don't answer, then it calls 000.
I had that on an overseas trip. Scared the bugger out of me. It was one of those like, oh, we've detected that you've had an incident. Do you need us to call emergency service? Like, where are you?
what happened to the car at the time when this happened, Josh?
Somebody in a car park had driven into the side of the lone car I had.
Uh-huh. Was it a General Motors car by any chance?
It was, yes.
Yes. Oh, were you using OnStar service?
I think it was called. I didn't take that much attention of it, but the lovely, calming lady voice who came over the car's audio system did do the whole, I can alert the authorities to your current location if you like.
Hang on. What have I done? What have I stolen? Actually, it would be, if you weren't expecting it, can you imagine if your car said, I can alert the authorities to your location if you want? No, it's fine.
That's fine.
I'll just keep on doing my own thing. Now, why? So far, we have covered being a criminal and dying on this show. And look, it's only 12 minutes past five, and we've got lots more for you.
If you want robots on air, listen to someone else. Joy 94.9 is real voices, real radio.
That's right. We're not synthesized voices. We actually are real people.
I do not compute.
But at some stage in the future, we might be.
Or holograms.
I can just see the possibilities for that. Just the entire joy is just pre-record. Like, just we get someone to sit there with a dictionary, read the entire dictionary out, and then we just voice track the whole station and it eliminates people
Eliminates people, as in.
Geez, like Terminator happening here.
Skynet will take over that. Joy. That's the end goal, right?
No. I think the way that robots are developing is that we're gone beyond the stage of somebody having to read out every single word in the dictionary.
True. Yeah.
And synthesizing, voices that way. I'm reading a book at the moment called The Turing Exception, which is all about artificial intelligence and robots and stuff like that. Very, very interesting. Which is why, Nicole, when you suggested these stories, I went, good timing, because it's all about robots.
See, it's a universal thing, isn't it? We're all looking into emerging technologies.
It's because we're all inside the Matrix. No. Drop the conspiracy theory. Sorry.
Do not take the blue or the red pill. No, but yes, I've been looking over some robotics, and in particular, we all know that drones exist, and they have existed for quite some time. But in this one in particular that I found, called the Solo, is something that is quite amazing. It's something that's been built in Canada, and it's something that has two big hard computer drives inside the actual drone.
Yep.
and you can actually fly it, and you can take selfies with it. You can take it over landscapes, and you can take it from one point to the other and film a particular shot if you wish. So a lot of film sort of goers are actually using it as well.
So can you pre-program its flight route?
Yes, you can. Oh,
okay. So you could so you could do something maybe perhaps manually as a fly through, and then say, okay, this is where I want to go, and replicate it, and then do it multiple times. That would be fantastic if you're filming something specific.
Definitely, and it's one of those things. It's got a really good flight control as well. You can actually teach yourself how to fly it. It's got a simulator. It's even got the actual controllers are also sort of a game sort of control. Feeling as well, so you're not feeling like you're kind of using something that's not
specially designed for
it. Yeah, it's really.
So it's not a control by your mobile phone, by smartphone device.
It's got the GoPro attached to it, so you can actually create images and things like that. So it's quite quite good to use. It's only in America at the moment, but they're actually going to be shipping it out throughout worldwide. So it will be here in Australia in July.
Yeah. Is this one of those drones that now had a few friends that had, you know, a couple of drones and stuff, and I've always looked at buying one, but one of my biggest things is battery life. The best I've ever seen was about 25 minutes. Now, if I have to wait 8 hours to use something for 25 minutes, it does my head in.
No, we'll sell you more batteries, sir.
Well, that's the other thing, you know, is are we going to have the point where drones are heavy-duty enough that they carry their own batteries, but then that's the negative of, you know, well, it's got to carry an extra 5 kilos of weights to...
What, like the sports car that has got a fantastic range of 2 kilometres and you need your own sort of fuel tanker behind you?
Yes.
Did it say anything about battery capacity?
No, the battery life is quite good. It's not 25 minutes, definitely, so it does last for quite a period of time.
Okay.
And obviously because it's got the computer... two computers on it, it's quite robust.
Reading your notes here, it's driven by I think reading some notes here, it's driven by Linux.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's why. Can you imagine a Microsoft drone that kept on rebooting mid-air?
Oh, gee. Or it gets lost.
It'll just ask you for a visual prompt, for an okay every 10 seconds. Are you sure you want to keep flying? Yes.
Are you sure? Yes.
It's like the Stoush years and years ago. And this almost seems like old world when it was sort of new world back then between Microsoft and General Motors, where I think Microsoft made some criticism about General Motors about if we built software like that, we'd have to do this. And GM came back and said, well, if we built cars the way that they do, we'd have to reboot every 10 miles.
Sad, but it's true.
Haven't we moved off a long way? I don't remember rebooting a Windows machine because, you know, it needs a reboot in a long time.
Successfully, my PC has been up for 143 days.
It's almost like the records at work. Days without injury. What I like about these type of drones is that you can use them for so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've spoken before about Amazon doing some trials with delivering parcels.
Yes.
And there's a case where it really needs, in terms of payload weight, it needs something quite hefty. I wonder if there's going to be much development in solar-powered drones, because that'd if
be
you think
good.
About it, if you're flying in clear weather, which hopefully you are most of the time because it's probably a bit hard otherwise if you need a specific task, that they could be self-charging.
I could just see the Android, the Amazon helpline. Look, you know, we found you're on drone number 437. The tech's actually just been dispatched to check why the battery hasn't kicked back in yet.
It's cloudy in your area and your delivery's been delayed. Indeed.
When can we expect the... The Solo.
Well, they're saying July. So July it'll be actually here in Australia. So there'll be some distributors that will be selling the product. At the moment, it retails $1,000 US.
Which, for the specs and what it does, is a pretty reasonable price for drones. There are some out there, looking at one the other day, that's not quite as spec as this, a little bit more heavy duty, though. It was going for about $3,500. And there's people here that are really happy to pay that because, you know... been, you know, YouTubing at night, and you know, there's now a thing called drone races where people are racing drones around football fields and stuff. And for something that, if I asked you 5 years ago what a drone was,
you'd say, yeah, sorry,
you know, that was something that, you know, the NSA used to spy on you.
It's the sound that you make when you talk about something that you're passionate about, Josh.
Drone.
Moving on. I wonder then, you know, when something becomes cheaper like this and more people use it, what's going to happen in terms of the requirements from a, you know, clearance perspective of airspace, because I think
and also privacy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Things are a little bit hazy, and there have been complaints about, you know, neighbours spying on the other back neighbours and stuff like that. There'll be more of these. I wonder if there's going to be some legislation that goes alongside with
it
just to
clear
this up.
Interesting to see once it sort of comes out what will happen.
Mm. So these are basically a form of robot that we have today.
Yes.
But there's a whole lot of new stuff that's going to be sometime in the future, and hopefully not the near far future, whatever, closer rather than later, especially the drones to help me in my old age next week. No comment. Okay, good. And and it looks quite interesting. A lot of combination of humans and robots interacting together.
Yes. So, you know, as we know, there is robotics technology happening, and it's trying to make it more human or humanized. So creating making different sensors, better sensors, cheaper sensors, so that the robot can actually understand its environment,
right,
and know what it's actually doing. And also, we all know that robots are built for a purpose in terms of helping to, you know, create cars and other industries, but they want to explore that a little bit more.
I wonder what the definition of a robot then is if you're using it for specific tasks to help you. So I'll give you an example. A while ago, we spoke about a company that Google bought that makes a, for want of a better word, a steady spoon. So if you've got some condition where your hand shakes a bit, it's really hard to pick food up. Mm-hmm. So what happens is your hand continues to shake, but the steady spoon steadies the spoon on the end. It's like a steady cam, but for spoons. And you can then sort of, you know, keep on eating, which is fantastic. Something like that, which may be that you use as some sort of augmenting yourself, is that a robot, or is it only becomes a robot when it can move by itself? I wonder what the definition is and where the boundary is.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. For me, I would say it's something that acts on its own, in that sense of it's got a program and this is what it does, and it'll keep doing that.
So the steady spoon then is a robot because it adjusts to the shaking and it will change.
It's robotic in the sense it's automated, you know, something that's automated to do a specific task, which I think would cover it.
Now, I've just set myself a goal for the show. Every single story that we cover, I need to relate it back to my mother.
Well, there is a...
My mother has a shaking hand and she'd like the spoon.
Well, there are robots actually at the moment trialled in Japan, and they've got a nursing sort of role. So they're actually helping patients get out of bed, supporting stroke victims. So, you know, we're talking about what's the purpose of a robot. Japan's obviously creating robots that have a purpose to help people.
I can see some fantastic things with robots in healthcare and, you know, how I think it'd be amazing to be able to walk up to a robot that's your triage at emergency, you know, takes your blood pressure.
Don't let me program that robot.
Well, this is the thing, though. So when, you know... How much do you trust a robot? But then, like, the second question I'll ask, I get shot for saying things like this, but how much do you trust a human?
Well, the human's creating the robot, too.
So there's that element in there.
This is it. So if you gave a robot and said, you know, a team of 20 people made a robot and said these are its 20 parameters that it has to do, and you know, if your blood pressure is this and this and this and this, this is what happens. Here's the WebMD version for a robot. You know, my always thing comes back to then who's verifying that data, and as a patient, do I trust that process?
And I think that words carry a lot of emotional feeling and emotional thoughts, because when you say robot, then you think of, you know, a robot moving and stuff like that. But really, at the end of the day, it is a piece of software that's driving a piece of hardware.
Yep.
And if you look at it that way, well, that happens today, because I'm sure the traffic lights that we trust our lives with every day are not, so there's not a human being at the other end saying, oh, I'll turn this one red and this one green.
So, what, there's no little guy in each traffic?
No.
I thought that. Yeah.
No, the little boxes. That is not their working conditions. It doesn't meet Australian standards.
I need to ring my parents. I've been lied to.
Yes, you've been lied to. We'll have to talk about the birds and bees later. Anyway, I'm getting off topic. So we already trust our lives to software that controls hardware and the lights. We have planes that essentially fly themselves, you know, for extended periods of time. It's there already, so this is just an extension of it.
Well, you know, I always say when I walk into a lift or an elevator, it's you know, what's actually controlling this. You know, the brakes aren't manual. They're, it's a thing that says, oh, this is falling at this speed, quick brake.
Or, you know, we're not travelling fast at all, go faster.
Yeah. So, you know, and like example the other day at work, we had a fire evacuation. Someone burnt the toast on one of the levels and the emergency exit doors are magnetic locked. Well, when the evac tone was triggered, the doors didn't open.
Interesting.
Mm.
So
if you had a robot present opening the door or doing something for you.
Well, that was it. And so we worked out that it was actually a human intervention that has to push the yes, open the doors button. So, you know, if that was a robotic automated kind of, okay, if this, then that.
I guess in that situation, it's the unexpected results and you only find out about it in a time when you don't have a lot of time to make a decision or to do something different, and that's when problems can strike.
Mm.
But for simple tasks in the health field, where, getting back to my mother again, where you may not get the help that you need when you need it because the staff are busy attending to other patients and perhaps more critical than you, that for the simple tasks, the tasks that really, you know, are hard, like lifting, a robot is perfect for.
Good morning, Mrs. Jones. I'm here to take you to your bath. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that'd creep out a lot of people.
Yes, indeed. Well, but, you know, again, it's a learning, it's a generational thing as to, what's going to happen. What other stuff can we see in the future with robots?
Well, Google's actually been awarded a patent for the ability to do robotic devices. So it just shows that Google's starting to go in that direction as well.
Yeah. So what does the patent cover?
Well, it says it's coming about in terms of, it says allocating tasks to a plurality of robotic devices. So systems and methods.
Dun. Okay. So it's how you control these and get them to do things.
Correct.
It sounds very high level for a patent.
I'm just imagining Google release this like campaign of 100 robots marching through New York or something. And
well, the image in the article said it all.
What was that?
Looked like Terminator-styled robotic.
Reading the article headline, you know, Google patents control system robot army domination. You know, it's like...
Okay.
Mm. Interesting.
I wonder how many end users as individuals become robots if their computer says, oh, do this now, how many they do it.
It's kind of like was it one of those movies where, they put an artificial intelligence chip into toys and then they came alive and, planning for world domination. I'm just imagining Google saying, oh, look, we're going to start building army weapons now. We're going to build... tanks and things, and we're going to put this chip in them because this will make them better when they're being used. And
what, when we can take them over and control them? It's like there was a software app, and I think it was either the Google Play Store or Apple Store, I can't remember which one, that was collecting data, personal data, and sending it back to the creator, which was against the terms and wasn't meant to be doing it. But at the time that it was tested, I assume then it was Apple Store. At the time it was tested, it didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently there was some code in there that was only that was designed to only turn this feature on after a certain date.
Mm.
So, we go through the testing, it behaves, it does everything we're meant to do, and boom, suddenly, whatever time period later, it starts sending all this data back. So how do we know there are no time bombs in robots?
We don't.
That's it.
Yeah. And not only that, it actually says that they're also looking at watches actually syncing with robots as well. So you can use your watch to actually make the robot do what you need
it to do. What do you want it to do?
Mm. And smart glasses too, so.
Will Asimov's three laws of robotics be sufficient? That we will ponder. It's exactly 5:30, and you're listening to Technogaze with Michael, Nicole and Josh. And we set a very high target for Josh and for Nicole, and that's to ponder the three laws of robotics. Will that be enough? And the answer is?
No.
No.
Okay. The answer is no. If you have a different opinion about that or about anything else, please get in touch. Send us an email on air@joy.org.au. Leave a message with Heath on 1300-JOY-949 and SMS 0427-JOY-949. Moving away from robotics... There's a new MacBook out. Have you guys seen the specs of it?
I have.
It is wonderful spec.
It is. Look, it's pretty cool. I was looking at buying a new Mac when they came out, and I decided to upgrade my previous Mac, even though it's a little bit older than the newer ones.
A little bit older? It was around before I was born.
My Mac One is beautiful. I don't like the whole single, you know, USB
It is not a single port machine. It has two ports, Josh. It has a USB-C connector and it has a headphone connector. What else do you need?
No, I need more ports than that.
Definitely. So my current one, you know, ignore the CD-ROM drive. Yeah, that's probably how old this one is. But it's got an SD card reader, a couple of USB ports, video out, you know, charger, headphones, mic. And I use it all the time.
Mm.
I would have loved to have upgraded to the new ones. They're a lot lighter. They're a lot, you know, they look a lot slimmer and sleeker and then better specs. But the whole, you know, you've then got to go and buy. I've seen a lot of things on Kickstarter about, you know, splitting the ports now and the little hub to carry to it. Mm. I want something I can take around. If I want something with one port, go and buy an iPad.
Mm. True. I agree.
Yeah, and you guys aren't alone. Like, the press have had a play with it recently, and their feedback was pretty much the same. They've started comparing to an iPhone and iPad, which are basically port-limited devices. Mm-hmm. They've got two ports. They've got whatever the connector is this week, and the thing on the top for the headphone.
And
the,
you put whatever the connector is this week. Like, that's exactly, sorry. That's exactly right, though. It's
now that, sorry, that's not only Apple. Everybody does
that. But it's not, you know, and so I've got a Surface Pro. Surface 3, it's got two ports on it. You know, it's got a USB port and a power charger. Now, at least with that, the USB port's a standard USB port. You can go and buy any accessories with it. It's still not enough, and I find very constantly that two would be great.
Okay, but this is one area where the new MacBook is great, because USB-C is an industry standard. It's not a Mac standard. Mm-hmm. So you could use any USB-C type power pack, which is good, I think. Unfortunately, it doesn't support MagSafe, MagSafe is another good thing, because it was designed so that if you accidentally knocked your power cord out, it didn't rip the whole computer out off the desk onto the floor.
Well,
it's one of those things that I want to know, and I want to pick the developer, you know, whoever came up with it, and say, why change it? I've seen a lot of things on forums that people have, like, there's a few people, designers, who walked out of Apple and said, you know, I'm not supporting
We don't like this direction.
Yeah, we don't like this direction.
The MacBook Air, mm-hmm. that still has a decent number of ports, doesn't it?
I think it does. I think
yes.
Yeah. But
it's still limited in what you can do with it.
Yes, and I guess you accept for a trade-off between lightness and mm-hmm. the things that you can do. But here is a very light machine. I think it's even lighter than the Air, or very close to it, if it's not lighter. That you're getting the trade-off, but obviously the trade-off is just as too much in limiting to one port. And those dongles that you're talking about are expensive. Mm. Like, one of the dongles that does essentially USB, another USB-C, a normal USB, USB-C, and also HDMI, is something like $130 Australian.
Mm.
It's a lot of money.
So you've got to keep spending and spending until you get what you need.
Yeah, and then you have all these dongles that you need to carry mm-hmm. with you. So
a bag, and you need to buy more accessories just to accommodate the computer.
Yeah, and you've got to buy them, and you've got to carry them with you. And being old, actually, the other theme of the show today is I'm old. The other old theme is when notebooks or laptops first came out, and I'm not talking about the old Compaq, which was more like a sewing machine rather than you couldn't call it a laptop. But when the laptops came out, they all had integrated power supplies, and then we went to the external power adapter.
Yep.
Which means I go somewhere, I've got to carry a power adapter. It only works with this brand, and, you know, you've got to buy two or three depending on where you are. Whereas something like this, yes, it still needs an external power adapter, but you can use a standard USB connector. Well, one that's going to become more popular, but it is, for all wants and purposes, it's standard. So that if I'm going somewhere and I know that they've got a power adapter, I don't need to bring my power adapter for this computer with me, because I know I can use that one there, and that power adapter is not going to sit in the corner just for the use of Michael's laptop. It's going to be used for other things when Michael's not there, which is a good use, but it's just the lack of ports.
So I remember my Lenovo that I had a charger that had a USB cable and a power lead on it, which then on the actual charger hub itself was a four-port USB hub.
Right, yes.
Which was great. The Lenovo little thin line thing only had two USB ports. This gave you another four, and it, it gave you, I think, five in total. Yep. So, which was awesome. You know, with Apple came out something like that.
That would be very useful because you go somewhere and you've got your laptop and you've got your phone and you've got to need two power adapters to take with you, and then you've got to find cables that are long enough and all sorts of things.
Yep. If they could turn the little brick charger into something that was a USB hub as well, might make a lot more sense to people.
Yeah,
and I carry a Leesy drive everywhere I go, so I need to have multiple ports.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's exactly. Not just when you're in the office or somewhere else.
Correct.
Yeah, maybe we'll see more devices with port piggybacks on them, and in and out that you can just piggyback.
It's a lot of things. A lot of companies I go into to do IT consulting stuff is they've all moved to laptops. But they're not using them as laptops. They're using them as as desktop machines, and they're all plugged into a dock and sitting there permanently.
And they stay,
And you're like, it's not
kind of like a little hub.
Yeah, which is great for an office thing. So if you can plug this into that, so if just having a little hub you could take with you would be awesome.
Mm. What we need then is we need some intelligent dock station that records the number of time the machine gets undocked. So you can do a review of your employees and say, you haven't undocked this in 6 months. Here's a desktop. It's cheaper and it's faster, and you don't need that laptop. We've got a pool one you can borrow from.
That goes against their hot desking, remote agile workplace thing that everyone's trying to push down.
You can still be agile and hot swappable, hot desking with all sorts of stuff.
Take your PC with you.
Some other complaints of the machine: the CPU's slower. They've compared it to a 2012 MacBook Air. The battery life is worse than the MacBook Air, and the webcam resolution is pretty low at 480p. So I wonder if this was rushed to get out to market before they could improve some of these things.
Were they trying to beat Microsoft's launch of the new Surface? Is that
possibly?
Well, maybe, because the Surface 3 has launched. And the Surface 3 is a revamp on the consumer Surface line, using some of the Pro features beforehand. And it's the thinnest and the lightest one yet.
It's got some pretty...
Oh, sorry. Hang on. I don't know if you can say 1/100th of an inch thinner is the thinnest and really stand there and beat your chest and say, oh, this is really good.
I'll just get the measuring tool out.
What's 0.12 of a pound in grams or milligrams, as the case may be? Okay, so it's a little bit thinner and it's a little bit lighter. What other stuff is there?
Well, there's some differences between the Surface 3 and Surface Pro 3 in terms of the kickstand. I don't know if that's a main feature, but... it's got a 3-position kickstand, so you can keep it up and upright while you're working.
Yep.
Don't know if that's as important, because there's so many other things that you can do with it.
Well, actually, the kickstand, I think, is important, because if I look here at our desk, there's an iPad that's propped up on an external case that's got a stand into it. So if you didn't need that, then...
What if for me, with a stand, I find that what if it actually breaks, and then obviously I've damaged it. And if I've got something that I can actually put a case to, then I can change the case any time. So it's got that personalization.
So with I've got a Surface, it's one of those ones where the mechanical stand, so if it snaps off, it renders the laptop useless. And they're at the moment getting parts out of Microsoft. We've deployed them at work. It's taken us 9 weeks to get a replacement pen.
Oh, really?
Right. 3 weeks to get a replacement charger. And when someone dropped theirs and got a kickstand, broke their kickstand, it was easy to just replace the device.
Exactly.
So are we creating throwaway items?
Well, we're not designing them properly, because really something like a kickstand should be designed to be, it will come off rather than break.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do break it, that we are stocked up with spare parts, because that's the most obvious thing that you would think is going to break, because, people think it's folded, it's not, and it gets jammed against something and all sorts of things.
Exactly.
What other features does it have?
It's got a magnetic charging port. Also.
What, like the Apple MagSafe? that's a unique invention.
From a review of one, they come in pretty handy.
Yep.
Except for they've got a little clip that's at the end of the charger.
Mm-hmm.
So when you wrap it up, you can clip the cable in. You can only put the mag charger, which is supposed to be able to go in either way.
Yep.
You can only put it in one way, because the charger then pushes against the case and comes out all the time.
So, right, I've
seen a lot of just little design flaws. Your pen, there's nowhere to put your pen.
Oh.
Right.
So there's no, there's
See,
no...
that's why I've got a case and I've got an opportunity to put my pen in the back.
That's it. With the previous models, you could slide the pen in.
Yes.
With this one now, they give you a little stick-on leather attachment. So you can stick it to your case and slide the pen into that, which for me, I've got this machine. There's plenty of things you could put in, you could do to make that an actual attachment.
Do you think they're trying to be minimalistic? They're trying to say we're like Mac, but you know, we don't have as many things.
We don't design it as well.
I think they're trying to sort of make it a minimalistic sort of device, but I don't think it works quite well.
A bit lacking in the execution of the design, which is a shame, really, because otherwise it looks quite good. Maybe we need a USB-D connector, which is a magnetic standard port.
I just need, like, you know, I'd be happy to go back to a DB9 plug. So for those who don't know, it's the old, you know, LPT printer plugging in. If it did everything, if it just branched off and did everything I needed to do, I would be okay with that. It's just, I think we're trying to reinvent things now that people are reinventing for the sake of reinventing, which is...
whatever comes around goes around type thing. And I remember in my days when serial ports were 25-pin and not just 9. The Samsung Galaxy S6 is in the process of being launched, or I think it started shipping last week. And as usual, there's been the drop test.
Oh, don't you love those drop tests?
I do. It's quite handy, actually. Although at the end of the article, it did say that, yes, these were controlled in laboratory controlled conditions and yada, yada, yada. And it's more likely that your actual disaster is going to be of a totally different nature.
Yeah, and putting it in a blender or something.
Hits the tram tracks, you know.
Yes. The S6, and there's a new test, the bendability test.
Yes.
Does it bend?
It's called the Apple Bend test. The S6 wins, apparently, on that one. It can survive 50 kilo of pressure.
If your phone's in a position where it's getting 50 kilos of pressure to bend it, you're going out of your way to... you definitely go out of your way to bend it.
Josh, not everybody's derriere is as svelte as yours, weighing under 50 kilo. Some of the other tests were the sliding test. Apparently, the further it slides, the worse it is, which makes sense because you don't want to put it down and sort of slide across the desk all the way
so
to
Timbuktu. Is this when you're sliding across on a sort of a bar sort of?
Yes, yeah. I'll have another one or whatever. I'm going to pay for it by sliding your phone across.
Pay.
Yeah,
pay
use
wave,
that to pay.
There you go.
Yeah. Sliding, not good. A drop test, they drop it 6 times from 6 feet. And the Galaxy survived better than the iPhone. The iPhone 6 Plus actually broke apart and stopped working entirely after 30 seconds.
I've had that.
But what's surprising is overall, there really wasn't much between them. Because if you look at the scores, so they're ranked, but if you look at the scores, there's not much between them.
Like 4 or 4.5.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's very, very little. The number one was the Galaxy S6, followed by the iPhone 6, then the S6 Edge, and the 6 Plus. So it appears that in the land of telephones, the bigger you are, the less durable.
Technogiz.
This is TechnoGaze. It's 6:15 with Michael, Nicole and Josh in the studio.
Sir Josh.
Sir Josh.
I've been saying it all, the whole program.
I will have to remember to back out of the room, keeping my eyes affixed to his, to give him the appropriate respect that he deserves with his new title.
So about time.
Thank you. Because you are my boss, Sir Josh. The Jawbone, the fitness tracker people, have released a new model, which looks pretty good. Because not only can you use it to measure how athletic you are and how well you're doing in terms of your steps and calories that you burn and all the usual things that you do with the Jawbones, you can go shopping with it.
Even better.
It's another one of these tap and pay devices, isn't it?
It is, but it is such a good idea. Because if you're wearing the Jawbone around every day because you want to see, you know, what you're doing, then and you go somewhere, it's like, I don't need to carry my wallet with me because I've got my Jawbone. I can pay for things.
How long is it till we have tap and pay muggings? just someone walks up and goes, hit me with your watch, come on.
Somebody bangs into my arm to get a reading off it.
Yep, I'm gonna just go on trams with a little RFID and just go, charged your credit card, charged your credit card.
Well, the RFID readers on these things, they have to be very close. It's not like,
extremely close.
It's like touching close, within a few millimetres. And also, it's not something that will just do it instantly. It has to sit there for a little bit. So there has to be a degree of intention, which is going to be hard to do on the tram.
Unless you're forcing them on.
hold their arm and hold it onto the pay machine.
Haven't been on a tram with me, Michael.
No, you haven't invited me yet, Josh. I was going to talk to you about that.
But so, again, like I'm so skeptical about all these little devices. It's worked with American Express.
Only.
So is that, you know, here in Australia, we've got a lot of different versions of American Express. There's the bank version of it. So you can go to Commonwealth Bank, ANZ, and get
their version of American Express,
yeah. which is linked to American Express. So is that going to be, like, these are all the
I think it's the same. I think anything that's branded with American Express credit will be used with this.
And then how am I going to show what version? Like, you know, I've got a black American Express card and a platinum one. How do I?
How do you flash it?
Do I get a platinum logo for my watch?
So what you're saying is we need personalised jawbones that are black if you're a black American Express customer, or blue. And that's a good idea.
Patent it quick.
Well, Jawbone and American Express do have some business relationship, and that's why they've come about with that. The other thing in terms of tap and pay, my Android phone finally got upgraded to KitKat. I've been waiting. And one of the things is that my bank app supports tap and pay on KitKat. So I now, when I shop, take my phone, I start the app up, I have to put a PIN number when I want to use my credit card, but I hold the phone up against the the reader, and it reads it, and people look at me as like, oh, what's that? But it's great because, again, I'm going somewhere, I don't need to carry my phone, and I know that you can get phone cases that have got a little holder for your credit card. Don't need that.
Look, with the phone, it's got that PIN lock. I think it's great, and it's one of those things with Apple Pay is, you know, use your thumbprint, I'm going to pay, pay on that. But it's adoption and stuff, you know, with my bank, I've got the little plastic chip thing you can stick to the back of your phone. You know, it's, when's it going to be integrated? When do I not have to carry my wallet?
That's true. This is
the thing is all these companies come up with these fantastic products, but then the adoption rate
is varied and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It certainly keeps you within the community.
Like, for me, it would be better if the phone companies went to people like Maestro and MasterCard and Visa and American Express and said, we're going to integrate this with your product rather than this is going to be an integration with the bank, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, integrate with the back-end paying system that everybody's common to. Yeah.
Then the stores don't have to go and update their systems to have Apple, you know, it's all that.
Although with my phone app, it is a MasterCard for all intents and purposes.
Yep.
So I just go anywhere that supports MasterCard. Jawbone, you go anywhere that supports American Express. So, but it depends what's the limiting factor. So obviously with the Jawbone, it's American Express only because they've done the deal with American Express. With my bank app, it's the issuing bank. So I suppose that kind of makes sense because who else is going to give me a credit card? We did have one sceptical overseas listener who said, Jawbone, what about an iPhone 6? We've had that for ages. Well, yes, you may have. But Mr. Pownie, who's out there, who sent in the message, there are other people in the world that don't. There is another... okay. So the iPhone 6 comes with the status of Amex Centurion, also for Mark. So you can use that for your Amex card. So that must be a deal that Apple has done with American Express, I guess. I
haven't heard about that, so it must be new. Mark's onto it.
Mark's bought the iPhone 6 already. Maybe. Last count not. On a shopping spree during these holidays. So, yeah, that's the new Jawbone. Now, Netflix, we were talking about Netflix last year. They've added a really useful feature, which is starting to be rolled out. And it's almost like subtitles, but what do we call them? Hearing titles, for want of a better word. Mm-hmm. You know that you're watching a TV show and you have to go somewhere into another room to do something, but the sound's loud enough and you can hear what's going on, except when, you know, it's the quiet scene because the murderer's sort of got the knife and they're about to plunge it into the person and you lose all of that. Well, for vision impaired people, Netflix have got a feature called narration, which you can turn on like you turn on French, English or subtitles, and the narration literally tells you what's going on during those periods of silence.
I'm using Netflix at the moment, so yeah. I did register last week, I mentioned. And I have noticed that feature. It's actually quite good. Yeah, you know, I actually just turned it on
to see what's
just
like.
Just to see sort of how it sort of described a film. But it's quite good. It's quite useful for those who do need to sort of, read information if they're not able to.
Yeah, they can hear it. Yeah. Because often, you know, vision impaired is not necessarily totally blind.
Exactly.
So it is literally impaired. So you can get some sense perhaps of vision, or perhaps you're going to somebody's place. And so why miss out on the audio aspect when you can have it read? Apparently it says, you know, things like big red logo appears on the screen, says word Netflix or something like that as part of what it does. So I think that's pretty good.
Mm.
The... The other thing is wireless charging on phones or wireless charging on devices, full stop. That's been one of those technologies that is coming around the corner and, and everything else and still waiting. And now, I don't know if this helps the adoption anymore, but IKEA has decided to go into the wireless charging business. And they've released a series of furniture, or shortly they'll release a series of furniture that includes built-in wireless chargers, which I think is pretty
so you can
innovative.
Stay longer in the store.
Well, in the store or in your home. So you buy the furniture and you have the wireless charger there. That you obviously need a wireless charging capable device. And to help you out with that, they do have cases for iPhones and for Galaxy phones that you can plug into and that becomes a wireless charging device. And it's built into your IKEA furniture. Why are you smiling, Josh?
I quite like that idea, the idea of just being able to put your phone on your bedside table. My experience with wireless charging has always been trying to line it up perfectly on the where it has to be. So
yes.
And then if you move it, it's just like having a faulty lightning cable, you know. It needs to be fairly precise. If they could come up with one, it's probably going to emit a bit more radiation than we like. Toss the phone onto the kitchen bench and it charges. Would be awesome.
So does that mean your phone has to be able to slide to it?
Well, yeah. Just ones that magna slide. Lines
well,
up.
Okay, so there is an industry standard called Qi. Mm-hmm. Even though it's spelled QI. And I read somewhere recently that the Qi standard is evolving so that the distance away from the charger is increasing. So instead of being within X number of millimetres, you can be within, you know, more millimetres. Not metres, but obviously more millimetres, which would solve that problem.
Yep.
And it would also solve the problem of things like how do you do a car charger? So if you've got like a little tray, you can put the phone in the tray and if it slides about, it will still charge. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't have to be on the spot precisely.
Yeah.
But it's good that at least it's becoming a little bit more mainstream like this. And IKEA will also have a retrofit kit. So they sell you a special drill bit so you can put it into any piece of furniture where obviously there's enough room to fit it to make a nice little hole that this thing pops up into and, use it a little bit more.
It's pretty cool.
So I'm hoping that my next phone's going to have wireless charging. Fingers crossed. It's meant to, but who knows?
I was very surprised that Apple didn't in their latest model.
Yes. Yeah.
I would have thought on their list of things to add, that would have been pretty high up, but obviously not.
Yeah, it's... I wonder why they didn't do it.
I think they're too busy with the Apple Watch.
To do that?
Mm-hmm.
There's another candidate for wireless charging.
Yes.
Because I think the Apple Watch, there's a special stand, but the contacts have to that's the perfect time to release wireless charging. It's the perfect application. And you sell a great big 30-centimetre by 30-centimetre charging mat to have by your bedstand, sell more accessories.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't I working for Apple in their marketing department? We will never know that answer, will we? No.
Technogaze.
I would like to point out that last question I posed at the end, just a little while ago, was rhetorical, and thank you to all the listeners who contributed to tell me why I will never be head of marketing or design at Apple.
No, I won't make that comment because you'll tell me that I'm calling you old again.
Go on, Josh.
No,
you're my boss. You can do that. So
I want to know, because you guys have posed a topic, and I'm catching up on here, because I was apparently plan B for this, because, you know, Mark's still on holidays, lucky man over there in Europe.
Oh, I told you plan B, not C. Oh, sure.
Well, there you go, I'm plan C. So, Disney have a 3D printer that can sew bunnies for you?
I know, it's so cool.
This just creeps me out a little bit. Are they trying to build robotic bunnies?
No. The 3D printer's not a bunny printer.
Oh, okay.
It is a 3D printer that can print soft material. And
bendable.
Bendable, yes. And a bunny is an example that they used for their prototype.
Okay, I was just expecting some sort of like bunny army. Disney and Google were going to get together, and this was going to be the next plague.
What, of robot bunnies? Of soft, bendy robot bunnies?
Oh, they're so cute. It's attacking.
It is a little bit disjointed from what I'm seeing, but, you know, serves a purpose.
The attack of the Google bunnies. No, the robot bunnies, sorry. Oh, yeah, the Google robot bunnies. That works. Hey, that's a good product line, the Google robot bunnies. What's interesting about this one is, you know, additive printing where you sort of layer down bits of plastic or metal one on top of each other? This uses fabric and it's a two-step process. The first step, it cuts the outline, but it doesn't pull away the material that's left in excess. And then it bonds one layer on top of the other with commercial glue. and then pulls away the other stuff, and what's left is your 3D shape.
Cool.
Cool.
Seems wasteful, though.
It is no more wasteful, I think, than... yeah, maybe. Okay. I don't know. But it's very good for prototyping.
Yeah. Looks good. I was doing some 3D printing over the weekend, and it took me about 4 hours to build something that then didn't turn out, which I was kind of disappointed in.
Oh, well, you'll have to increase your R&D budget, won't you? We, as usual, are running out of time. So, yeah, that's it for today. So I'd like to thank you, Nicole, for being here.
Why, thank you, and you too.
And Josh has plans.
And Sir Josh.
And Sir Josh, thank you for coming on board.
Welcome. Been a pleasure.
Excellent. And we'll have you on again, I'm sure.
Sure.
If you missed any part of the show, of course, we've got podcasts. And if you go to joy.org.au/technogaze, you can listen to that. We're coming up next with Dick, who's taking us back to the cheesy 80s in this week's A Touch of Pink. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch you next week.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.